You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 13th, 2011. This is episode 192, Labels and Passwords. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. We're up to episode 192. This is your host, Martin Spriggs, and I am joined, as usual, by the lovely Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Someday I'm going to have to start the podcast so I can say I'm joined by the lovely Martin Spriggs.
Sure. We'll make that a high priority. Maybe episode 200.
Ooh, wouldn't that be a way to celebrate?
How so about you
that?
Get to do all the intros from 200 to 400.
Oh, Martin, afraid
be
not.
Be careful what you wish for. All right, well, we are back, and we're right in the midst of our summer series that we've entitled Wells Hacker. I've been enjoying coming up with a topic a week. It's actually not that difficult because a lot of the things that we're coming up with we use on a week-to-week or day-to-day basis, and that's definitely the case this week, I think.
Yeah, I think just little tidbits here and there, productivity things. I always tell people that I wear a tool belt of web tools that I can make use of that I can pull out. I don't use them all every day, but when I need them, they're there at my disposal. I guess I shouldn't just call them web tools, though, because they're local computer-centric as well.
So, yeah, we've talked about Web 2.0 tools. We've talked about operating system-level tools, just general productivity techniques across the board. I don't think we've done anything on the hardware side. Maybe we'll have to put that on our agenda for a future show. But there's all kinds of things we're considering, and you are going very practical today, something that I would say every church and school secretary cares about.
That's right. My blog post this week was called Labelpalooza. What an exciting title, because we've just got all kinds of things at our disposal with the Avery Design and Print online tool for making some awesome labels for our church or school. And this is totally a Web 2.0 tool. You do all your work right there via the internet on their website. And when you're done, you can print from there, or you can print to PDF if you want to save a copy of the label sheets that you've created. So I headed out over to the site. I took some screenshots to kind of walk you through the process. It's really intuitive and straightforward. And I actually took my screenshots from their beta version. So when you go there, you may notice there's a button that says start now or try the new version that's currently in beta. And that's what I used for my screenshots. I figured that's what will be live soon enough and probably the only thing available. But both versions work basically the same. What you're going to do is decide what layout you want for your labels. So how many labels there are per sheet and that kind of thing, and you can do that really simply by just typing in the product code from your Avery labels sheets, or you can scroll through all the possibilities and narrow it down, and they show little screenshots and the label dimensions as well, so you get an idea of how many fit on the page. Once you decide what layout, then you need to put your content in for your labels, and there's lots of options there. One thing that the Avery people give you is a whole slew of designs for your labels. So lots of pretty small graphics to enhance your labels, different fonts that you can use, and all kinds of things like that. And then you can also customize that design with your own photos if you want. You can control the font and the placement of text. You can have multiple text areas on your label. So if it's a large label and you want to print something really large in one area and then maybe a small tagline kind of thing in another, you could do that with your labels. Now, I know I use labels for all kinds of things. I was working on a project this spring for our Prayer Pals group, and I made up some booklets, kind of in a bulletin format. Mm-hmm. And they were printed in black and white, and it was a lot of printing and things. I didn't want to print the whole thing in color, but I printed some really large labels that were in color that went along with the theme of our Prayer Pals event. And so I was able to add color to my bulletin, basically, by affixing a color label mm-hmm. from the Avery Print and Design site.
I suppose you could do that on many different surfaces that you couldn't normally print on, whether it be a binder, a folder, you know, something that's going to be hard to add, maybe the design that you'd want. If you could do that on a label just to fix it, and then you've got the color and the customization.
Exactly. And by, you know, being able to upload your own graphics, it can make things really seamless and well-designed across all your media that you're presenting. So, you know, I had some printed sheets and things for our Bible study for that day, and it went right with this Prayer Pal booklet that I was putting together. So,
nice.
Very professional look. And then once you've done that, you can decide on the text you want to include on your labels. And they even allow you the option of uploading a spreadsheet and doing a mail merge right there online, which is just really awesome. So, if it's your Christmas card labels or your labels for your church directory or whatever it may be. I know in our school, we use labels for sending home material with the students, and we have a special spreadsheet that identifies the oldest child in each family so that we send home just one per family with the oldest child that's at our school. And so being able to upload those spreadsheets with all your data on it is a real powerful thing, and it just merges really easily. You can see what the different fields are, different columns in your spreadsheet, and add whatever fields you want to your labels very simply. Mm-hmm. So when you're done with all those steps, which can take just a matter of seconds, really, you push the magic button and you've got your labels ready to print. And like I said, you can save it as PDF as well. So just kind of gets you away from having to do a lot of steps in your local word processor. You kind of do it all online, and it walks you through. They have over 1,000 different templates or layouts for labels. So I think you could find something to fit your needs there.
Yeah, that would seem to far exceed anything that you'd have in, let's say, a Microsoft Word, because that's not always going to be up to date depending on your version of Word. It's not going to have all the available label sizes, I would assume, mm-hmm. like obviously the Avery site would. And you're certainly not going to have all the built-in templates that mm-hmm. Avery's going to provide, you know, in that experience. So the process, I assume, is exporting your list in some kind of spreadsheet or comma-separated value CSV file, mm-hmm. uploading that, and you're good to go.
That's right. Good to go. And hopefully our church and school office workers will benefit from this little tip. Just one more step to sending us to the cloud, Martin, where we're doing more and more with online Web 2.0 applications. And it's getting easier and easier to do as well.
So do you download this as a PDF, or does it print straight from the Web 2.0 app?
Yes and yes. Oh, you can do both. So you can also even save your working file. It's in their own proprietary format.
Yeah.
And then you'd save that locally. And then the next time you run the program online, you can upload that file from your local computer and come back and make changes to it.
Start over again. Cool.
That's right.
And no cost, I assume.
No cost. My favorite price tag is free.
Okay. Very good.
So
my blog post of the week is simply titled ABC 123. And before you break into song, Sally, I know you want to. You know, the old Jackson 5 song, I'm sure.
I am old enough to remember that.
I wasn't going to say it, but everybody knows it, so regardless of age. But it has nothing to do with the Jackson 5 or singing. It's all about passwords. And the point of my blog post is the importance of securing your passwords. So I go through a series of five, they're not sequential steps, but they're tips, I guess, that everybody who is concerned, and everybody should be concerned about password security, should care about. And they go from some of the more technical suggestions to the, some that are a little bit more simple. So the first one, and I'll just go through these quickly. You can go through the blog post at martinspriggs.com and read them for yourselves. But obviously the first one is don't use the same password, you know, across all your sites, especially the ones that maybe you use for Twitter and Facebook. Don't use the same ones there that you use for your online banking. A lot of people do online banking now. So mix those up. Make sure that if Facebook or Twitter gets hacked or some other site that you go on that maybe isn't as concerned about your password as you are, that they're not grabbing a password that they can use elsewhere in your online banking or whatever. So that's a quick tip. And the way that I kind of get around that is I use an online password management tool called LastPass. I think I've talked about it in the past. Some people get a little queasy about that, but it's I find it to be a very secure site. They use the same encryption levels that banks use to secure your passwords. And the way it works is it's an online database of your username and your passwords, any of those that you give it, and you can give it to them as you type them in on your favorite sites. It'll remember them. And then there's a little plugin in your browser that will call them up or autofill them when you come back to that site. And then you have one master password that should be a super-duper secret password that you never share, or that also that you change regularly that gets inputted when you want to do any password management. So it's a pretty simple concept.
I'm a LastPass fan myself.
Are you?
And I can tell you I'm a convert, actually. I used to use very faithfully Password Safe, and mm-hmm. I think it's an
Me
awesome
too.
Program as
yeah.
well. The thing about Password Safe is, unfortunately, it's not in the cloud. It's
right.
not everywhere that I want to be
yep.
On my mobile device or on multiple computer connections. And so I'd end up with my Password Safe stored nicely and securely on my home computer and not being able to access it when I was on my
yep.
School computer, for instance. And so
you need them everywhere. And they have mobile platforms. If you pay, I think, $12 a year for the premium account, I think you can get a mobile app that you can take along on your iPhone or your Android device, and you've always got it with you, which is kind of important. You can store other stuff in there too if you have other pins or safe combinations or whatever. Those can all be stored in there too, and those can be doubly encrypted because you can assign a separate password to those secure notes, as they call them. So very good tool.
Definitely.
So that was tip number one. Number two is don't store or write down your most sensitive passwords, especially like your online banking password. A lot of people are prone to do this. They just get so nervous that they're going to forget it that they write it down someplace, you know, whether it be a post-it note or you know, slip of paper that they tuck in the back of the drawer. If you can avoid that, don't do it. If you can't sleep at night thinking that you're going to forget it, then if you do write it down, then maybe a suggestion that I've used in the past is, you know, write it down on a little slip of paper and tape it to the underside of some obscure drawer in your house that maybe a burglar is not going to necessarily check or have time to check. And
you know what the problem is then? You got to remember where you take
exactly.
it.
Exactly, yes.
It's a challenge in itself. Short-term memory disease.
That's right. So that's just a good general practice not to do it if you can at all. And that's what I do. My online banking password, which is the one I protect the most, plus my LastPass password, are not written down anywhere. Which is a little bit dangerous, but I use them enough that I'm not going to forget them. So tip number three is use at least 10 characters in your password. This is kind of an interesting one. I post a little link to a Rocket Boom video there called Passwordology, which is kind of cute. And the point they make there is a 9-character password can be cracked by some of these password cracking programs in about 2.5 months. So they run this program and they try all the different combinations and ultimately they figure it out. If you use 10 characters, however, versus 9, it takes 19 years to run that same password cracking
wow.
Solution. So just that one extra character is probably worth it. So most of my passwords are actually 12 or 13, so hopefully I'm in a little bit safer zone there. So think about that. Number four, if you're having trouble remembering your passwords, use some kind of mnemonic device that will help you remember that. We all probably remember Roy G. Biv to remember the kind of the colors of the rainbow, kind of a concept like that. And I've got a link to a site there that gives you all kinds of suggestions there. Maybe it's a common phrase or an uncommon series of letters and numbers that you attach some kind of memorable phrase to, so that when you're thinking of your password, you just have to remember the sentence that you put together that goes along with that, so that the first letter of each word in your sentence corresponds to the letters in your password.
I enjoyed checking out this website, and they gave you some interesting mnemonics. Let's see, Clive's sixth grade jumper restores Fife's greater Xerox ineffectuality.
Some of them anyway, are overly memorable, but
and you know what they do is not just the first letter of each word in the mnemonic, but in this case they mentioned sixth jumper, so they use the number six in place of that word, and where it says greater, they used a greater than sign instead of a G for that word. So mixing up the characters and numerics and special characters and lowercase and uppercase, all those kind of things are helpful when you're doing your passwords.
Right. You could say something like Jesus fed the 5,000 in Matthew, 12, whatever, something like that. And then my last tip number five, is never email your password or save emails with passwords in them that have been given to you. Email is probably the most insecure communication tool that we all use. It can be easily intercepted. It's not encrypted in any way. It's stored on servers, many of them. So you have to assume that your email is not going to be private. It can be hacked easily. And it's just not a good practice to store your valuable information in emails. And I know a lot of people do that. Email is their kind of their historical record of their online activity, including usernames, passwords, and so on and so forth. Some people have attachments of their tax returns, et cetera, et cetera. Just not a good idea to put that kind of stuff in email. So that is my last and final tip. It's important, I think, to secure passwords, especially if you're in a position to be managing congregation member names and information, or school kids information. That's all very private stuff that would be a very bad thing if that were able to be out in the wild and people were able to use that for nefarious purposes. So you have some responsibilities if you're a pastor, teacher, and have some kind of control over that information, not just to mention your own personal information. So that's my tips on password management, ABC 123.
Very good. I think it's kind of ironic that you're talking about hackers in our Wells Hacker series. Just to be clear, we're white hat hackers. We're trying to teach you good things that will improve your productivity, not ways to
use our powers for good, not evil.
Yeah, be evil with your hacking.
Do not be evil. All right, should we move on to community feedback, Sally?
We should. I'm excited to share a lot of community feedback this week. From Facebook, we heard from Jim Esmeyer, who's with Jesus Cares Ministry through the Lutheran Home Association, and he liked the Digo List idea and was excited to put that to use. So you'll have to let us know how it goes for you, Jim.
And that was your tip last week.
That's right. And we also heard something from one of your recent blog posts about mouseless browsing, all the different keyboard shortcuts. Alicia Cameron, maybe you know her, Martin.
She's my daughter, yes.
Followed up, and I loved her tip. This is one I didn't know. She says she uses control backspace, and it takes you back to the previous page in most browsers, but it does it in a new tab, which if you don't want to lose where you are, but you want to go back to a previous page, you might try the control plus backspace key. So,
by the way, happy anniversary to Alicia. It is her anniversary today. We're recording on Tuesday, so she's been married all of 2 years. So,
wow.
To Thomas and Alicia, happy anniversary, and many more blessed years together. Should say that I also did some Skyping with Alicia the other day. I was testing out the new Skype in Facebook feature. So obviously she's a Facebook friend, and we gave that a whirl, and we didn't have great results. I'm not sure what it was, and we both use pretty standard equipment. Now, it's not that we're in the Stone Age at all, but One time I could see and hear her. The next time when we tried it, she could see and hear me. But we never got both together. I think we could actually hear each other once, but we never both saw each other and heard each other at the same time. So I think they've got a little work to do. We tried it on different browser platforms. And any of our listeners have had, I don't know, Sally, if you've tried it, but we just didn't have any luck with it at this point.
I am just not a webcam person. I had one at one point, and I don't know. There's not that many people, and it just seems like overkill.
Not that many people you want to see?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Who make use of it? I don't know. Maybe I'm just the wrong generation for webcam usage, but seems like overkill. It takes a lot of bandwidth, and when we can hear each other, that seems to be plenty. So mm-hmm. Okay. Haven't tested it.
Now I know why you live way out in Sleepy Eye, just a recluse.
A backwards kind of girl, yeah.
All right. And next I know up, you're not either, so keep going here.
Next up, Pastor Clint Rogas from St. Paul in South Haven, Michigan, wrote to us. And one interesting tidbit he shared was that they aren't doing any print bulletins in their congregation anymore.
They are using all screen, huh?
Exactly, 100% PowerPoint with their hymnal. And he says the congregation has adjusted. It took some time, but most of them like it. And they are saving over $1,500 a year in printing costs. So there's some real dollar savings there.
For sure. That's exciting. I bet a part of their regular prayers on Sunday morning is for electricity.
There you go. We'd be kind of lost without it.
That's right.
And he also was kind of following up on my iPad post, wondering how the iPad, in my mind, compared to the Android and why I chose iPad over an Android tablet device. And boy, he nailed me on that one because I really didn't consider the Android tablet device. I don't know about you, Martin, but I was so hooked on my iPod Touch and confident that the iPad was what I wanted. There was no swaying me from that decision. So,
I do have an Android tablet. I got one not too long ago for testing, and I can maybe give a review on that a little bit later. But
that would be great.
It's not quite as elegant, I guess I'll say that right off the top, as the iPad. It's not as polished, but it has some advantages as well. So
I saw the Apple rumor mill was generating some buzz this weekend, saying that there would be a new iPad coming soon.
Oh, for sure.
They talked about even before Christmas. That would be something if they released two in one year. But we'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it. There's always rumors.
Thanks to Clint for sharing with us. I don't know if Clint has contributed to the show before. If he hasn't, welcome. And we'd love to hear from new listeners.
Definitely. One who has contributed in the past is David Schumann, who's from Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin. And he sent an interesting email. I'm not quite sure if the times are ready for this, but he was Skyping recently, and he had the thought, what if we were able to Skype in organists from remote locations to assist with congregations that have organist shortages? Mm-hmm. So actually the music coming from a different location and being transmitted electronically. And I think there's probably some challenges still with that, with bandwidth and lag in that kind of communication. Mm-hmm. But maybe he's given us a peek into the future that we can do that kind of thing at some point in the future.
We're getting closer. I don't think we're, as you mentioned, I don't think we're quite there yet, just with the reliability. I think one step short of that, which I think some congregations are considering or even doing, is if they're without an organist, they find another one, you know, in another location who has the ability to plug in some MIDI, send the files over, and then use those MIDI files in the service itself.
Yep. So lots of possibilities for technology to assist with worship.
Mm-hmm.
Our friends in the Lutheran Schools Office passed along a link to thinkfinity.org. Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about this in the past, Martin. This is a kind of a social community almost that Verizon's developed for teachers, where there's all kinds of lesson plans available, all kinds of activities, not just for teachers, but for homeschoolers, parents, kids, covering all grade levels and all subject areas. So just a large collecting point of different educational resources, free lesson plans, that kind of thing. So if you're a teacher and you haven't checked out thinkfinity.org, you might want to surf over. We'll include that link in the show notes.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Verizon is behind that, but it's their foundation. So it's certainly got, I think, a neutral approach to technology and some valuable information.
Mm-hmm. We had some Twitter buzz this week, first from Jason Schmidt, who found the Northwestern Publishing House books in the Logos Bible Software library. So if you are a Logos user, then you might want to check out that library on the Logos website.
And I've been in conversations recently with some MPH folk that they're definitely looking at trying to get some of those resources onto other ebook platforms, especially the Kindle. I think it would be great to have, let's say, the People's Bible on Kindle, just all in one spot there, just a great resource. Something like that is hopefully not too far in the future.
Good. You'll have to keep us updated on that, Martin. That's exciting news. Mm-hmm. Jason also asked the question, when does Wells Tech go Google Plus? There was a little bit of Google Plus buzz this weekend, thanks to Pastor Dan Walters, who invited several of us. Yeah. And so if you're looking for an invite, I might be able to figure out how to send one your direction.
I've done that too, so let us know.
If you want to email us at wellstech@wells.net, we'll do our best.
It's not so exclusive anymore. I read this morning there's about 2 million people on Google Plus, so it's not a very small club anymore. But I think there's possibilities. I think you and I have to probably talk a little bit about how best to use that. I'm not totally sure yet how best it works, the difference between is it Facebook? Is it Twitter? Is it somewhere in between? And how best to use that? So
right. I did notice that you tagged an article, Martin, at how churches can make the most out of Google Plus from Church Mag. And so I'll make sure and include that link in the show notes as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's see. Eastside Wells had a great question. They were looking to embed the Wells Connection video and make use of that on their website. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, all the Wells videos are hosted on Vimeo. There are actually 471 awesome videos that are out there in the Wells Streams collection on Vimeo. And embed code is available if you go to the Vimeo site where they are hosted. I found all kinds of videos there. I even found one called Aaron's Story, which was a presentation I saw at a women's retreat several years ago. And I noticed that Wells has posted that out on Vimeo as well. So all kinds of things for you to make use of and embed on your website. And we'll have a link to that collection in our show notes.
Yeah, we've tried to get as much as we can. Now, there is some ancient video that's still on, I don't know, reel-to-reel or something that we haven't converted. But most of what we've done in the past 10 to 15 years, I think, is up there. So take a look at that.
Conference presentations, lots
from all sources. Wells Kingdom Workers material is on there, Communicating Christ. So it's not just Wells Corporate here, as we say.
That's awesome. So a great treasure chest to be explored. Mm-hmm. A quick tweet from Perry Lund notified us that he's doing a Joomla upgrade over on his church website. And so far, so good, he said. Apparently, there's no template for the new version of Joomla. The template he's using has become outdated. So that's a little bit of a sticking point. He's having to select a new template and do some customizations there. But we'd love to hear more about how your Joomla upgrade goes. You'll have to send us a link when you're all done so we can check out your new and improved website.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Martin. I think we're up to the part where we talk about Digo links.
Digo links. We got plenty of those. I've
share.
Got some. You've got some. And we have some from our good friend Jason Schmidt. I'll just pull one of these out of here. The one that maybe is most interesting is something from the Communicate Jesus blog. What questions might people have before visiting church for the first time? I've encouraged everybody that I ever talk to in our final web training or website development or any consulting that I do, it's really important to have kind of that visitor's page, commonly asked questions by visitors that you know, there is some fear, some trepidation as they consider going to your church for the first time. And you want to answer as many of those questions as possible. And this article talks, this blog post talks about a number of those questions. So take a look at that. We'll put that link in the show notes. And all the rest we'll put in there, too. Some of them I talk about Google Apps versus Office 365, which I'm kind of bullish on. I like where that is headed. And you already mentioned the one about how churches can make the most out of Google Plus. So take a look at that.
Very good. One worth mentioning from Jason Schmidt is free teaching resources and lesson plans from the federal government. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of this resource, but let's see if I can bring it up. It's free.ed.gov, and they have just a huge collection of links to all kinds of resources organized by subject area that you can make use of from all across the web. So check that out if you're looking for some lesson plan ideas. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I was recently visiting the website of Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and I noticed that they had, actually someone pointed out to me, their introductory video, and they have a video for both their church and their school. They're very professionally done. When I did a little digging, I found that those videos were actually hosted on YouTube and embedded in their site from their YouTube thing. The interesting thing is, over on YouTube, they've had thousands of hits on these videos. The church introductory video, I'm sorry, I clicked on the school one first. Nope, I clicked on the church one. Over 3,700 views of their video. And it got me to thinking that, you know, maybe people are searching Manitowoc on YouTube, and there's their church video that's coming up to introduce them to their church. And what a great way to make double use of resources that you're developing for your website, mm-hmm. by also hosting them on these more public forums and tagging them in different ways so that they'll come up in searches as people are looking at your city, for instance, or your location, whatever it may be. So I'm not sure how many hits the school one had, but it was quite impressive as well.
Nice.
Over 700 hits on the school video.
Cool.
So I applaud their success with that. I think that's really exciting to see.
Very good.
And very good examples for any church or school who's looking to do introductory type
awesome.
Videos.
Great. Thanks to them and to everybody who contributes to the show by giving us feedback and tips or comments, suggestions. All the above are welcome. Wellstech.wells.net is the website, wellstech@wells.net. The email, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/wellstech. We're out on Twitter, and of course you can always communicate directly to Sally or myself through our blogs, sallydraper.com or martinspriggs.com. Well, should we close the show? Well, actually, next week, we're not sure what we're doing next week, so you have to tune in and see.
We're doing Wells Hacker.
We whip this up, yes. We get inspired at some point during the week, and voila, we have a blog post. So
you'll
have to tune in next week to find out
you'll
what those
are. You'll be as surprised
are.
As we are.
That's right. Let's close the show with the Branches Band and their song, The Mountain, from their album, Light Eternal. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Join us next week.